Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Guess I haven't arrived yet either. No rap for me. No rap for the playbook. We might have to work on that. Maybe, Kevin, we could spin our own rap. Can you write? If you can write.
I can try. I just don't have that much street cred, you know?
Yeah. I can try to sing. We can see if we can pull that together.
I don't know about that.
I said try. Welcome into the playbook for hashtag WTF Wednesday here on
the
Patriots.
The indisputable leader of the game.
No, that's not good.
He's the most tip-top, top cat.
How many years ago was that? That was probably well in advance of
sucky.
Yeah, well in advance of Mr. Collins being in attendance. Coming up on the program, as I mentioned, ESPNBoston.com's Mike Reese, who he's been. Let's put it this way: we graduated him from here, I think, at one point in time. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he start out writing for Patriots Football Weekly?
Yes, he did.
I believe he did. Eric Scalavino is kind enough to stick around with us here for a few minutes before he has to get off and get working, and I want to ask you about your trip out west. But
okay. What
I also want to make sure that our listeners know today is that because Mike is so well, he's universally, I think, well-liked by everybody who follows the Patriots. If you see his stuff on, especially on ESPN Boston, and you see him on SportsCenter doing hits, covering the Patriots, what have you, he's going to be in studio once he's done taping the episode this week of All Access. I wanted to give our listeners here at the top of the program a chance, if you got a question, to fire it off for Mike, and I will try to ask as many of them as I can in the 15 or 20 minutes that we have him here on the program. I would say open up the phone lines, but that might take forever. So we'll keep the phone lines open. If we can squeeze a phone call in or two for Mike while he's here, because we rarely get this chance to do the one-on-one thing. In fact, you even get rarely the chance to do the one-on-one thing unless you hit his mailbag once a week on ESPNBoston.com. Go ahead and line up, 855-PATS-500. 855-728-7500, the toll-free number. If you want to send an email, webradio@patriots.com. If you want to float out a question via Twitter, give us the follow on @JRBroadcaster. And on Facebook, post it up on the John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, Facebook page. So we'll at least start it out for that here on WTF Wednesday. The first thing, though, that I want to talk to Eric Scalavino about is how was your week out in La Jolla in San Diego land?
It was good. It was very good. Excuse me. I still have traces my sinus infection that I got.
Nice.
As soon as we got on the plane in Green Bay to fly out to San Diego and we took off.
So you had that the whole week out there?
I had it the entire week. As soon as we departed Green Bay, we were ascending. I got the sharp pain in my ears, and I knew right away that I was going to be.
Dude, that's your penance for going out there.
Yeah. So I had to deal with that all week. I lost my voice almost completely on Thursday and Friday of last week.
Wow.
And I still don't have it completely back, but I'm feeling a little bit better. But we had a good time. We had a great location where we stayed. We had a lot of great restaurants that we visited. I got a chance to go to the Naval Hospital with the team and our friends from KSP down the hall.
Sweet.
So that was really one of the highlights of the trip was going to see those military personnel who are rehabbing
cool.
and the people
yeah.
who are helping them in their
Very
rehabilitation.
Cool.
That was something really special. So overall, great week. And I felt confident all week that the team was going to respond to their loss in Green Bay. Really close loss, a game they could have won. If they had just had the ball a little bit longer, I think they might have. And if, you know, Gronk's non-catch in the end zone there that was so close. I thought they responded well early in the week, and the fact that they were going straight to Southern California
mm-hmm.
off of that loss, I think
kept them focused.
It kept them focused, gave them a little time to relax, decompress, and get over the loss, but also to get a jump on the Chargers a little quicker than they might have if they had flown back east.
You realize they almost ruined it with the whole Bieber thing, right?
I don't believe. I don't believe that for a second.
Oh, I wasn't taking any chances.
No.
I screamed bloody murder when I saw those photos.
No. But I thought it was good foresight by the team to do that. I mean, it's not unprecedented. We did that six years ago on two separate occasions in the same season, and it worked out well that time. And I just felt good about them going into the Chargers game. Now, it started out. Boy, I can't remember a game with more energy throughout on both sides of the ball and more momentum swings. There was really, it was really one of the more exciting games I'd seen in a while.
It was actually, you're right. It was actually a very good football game. The frustrating part of it was, though, is to see some of the choices made in the play calls, which we went through yesterday on Nitpick Tuesday, and not taking advantage of, being able to take advantage of, like, McCourty's pick six because you have the big hit. And by the way, I did want to bring this up, but I don't know if you guys talked about this in the last hour of the show, but the NFL Vice President of Officiating, Dean Blandino, did review and had this to say about the Brandon Browner hit. And he says, and here's the quote if you haven't seen it. I think the first problem was that we announced helmet to helmet, and this is not a helmet to helmet hit. That's incorrect. So it's rare, first of all, I think that you see the NFL admitting that they made a mistake on the call.
Yes.
It was a mistake. However, and then Blandino continues, when you watch the play, Browner actually does a good job trying to lead with the shoulder and get his head to the side. You can see his head is to the side, and he does lead with the shoulder. The rule does protect the receiver who's trying to catch pass. It does protect him from hits with the shoulder and the forearm to the head and the neck area. When you watch this replay, you can see there is some initial contact to the face mask.
Yes.
And that's really where the foul
is. Right, exactly. So, and that's what I kind of, when I did my film breakdown on Monday, and I looked at that play over and over again, obviously it's a big play in the game, that was what I said was, it wasn't helmet to helmet as it was announced, but it was still warranted of a flag because he made contact. Maybe inadvertently.
And
maybe
the head popped back.
Well, the guy got concussed and left the game.
Yeah.
But it still was worthy of a flag, but it wasn't for the reason that the official gave. It wasn't helmet to helmet.
Right.
But it was still far too close to the head and neck area, which I agree. The league is doing the best they can, I think, with trying to wean players off of this instinct to try to go for another guy's head and injure him and take him out of the game.
Here's what's going to happen because of this, however. The rule committee is going to have to make an exception and make this play and others similar to it reviewable with video replay.
I think they should just make every play, every call reviewable.
Would simplify it.
Don't change the number of reviews that a coach gets.
In other words, you get two challenges.
You
can challenge anything
whatever
you want.
Whatever you want.
Right.
Just go back and look at the video.
I think that'll be the simple way to do it, and I hope that they do simplify it that way, because then nobody has a gripe about anything. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you don't have a challenge, you don't have a challenge. That's the rules.
Right.
But because there's so much gray area over what is a penalty, what is reviewable, what's not a penalty, what's not reviewable, let's just make everything reviewable. And I really believe the competition committee and the rules committee will address this. They have to address this at the very least. In fact, we were told, and Blandino did say earlier, apparently on NFL Network today, that he expects this to be reviewed in the offseason.
Well, yeah, somebody, either a team or the members of the competition committee have to bring it up. And
It came up last year and was tabled, which is why I said it's somebody's got to bring it up again.
Right.
And there needs to be a simplification or at least a clarification of what is reviewable.
The entire NFL rule book needs to be simplified, streamlined. It's like the tax code. It needs to be cut and simplified. There needs to be fewer rules, not more of them. So I hope that's one of them that they do address. Well, you have a challenge. You have reviews. You're already reviewing plays. Just let that be another thing you can review. If you have an issue with what happened on a play, toss the flag. Now, you run the risk of losing your timeout if there isn't conclusive evidence for your case, but that's part of throwing the challenge.
Part of it.
You risk it.
Absolutely part of it. So, anyway, I think that's a step in the right direction. I think that certainly that, fans, coaches, administrators, GMs, what have you, they'll probably be pleased at some point. It's unfortunate, But the rule is the rule for now. I do expect, as I suggested yesterday, that, again, Brandon Browner most likely will have some discussion with the coaching staff over, you know, hey, look, not for nothing, but you just can't go up in the head and neck area. You know, everything is going to have to be lower because you're going to get flagged because you're now a marked man in this league amongst the officials, amongst the other coaches, the other players. And anything that's remotely close, guess what? That flag is coming out. And you don't want that to cost the Patriots dearly. That took away a pick six. And in a playoff game where everything is magnified, that could have been absolutely the death knell for the Patriots on Sunday night.
I thought at the time, I thought, boy, that's a huge momentum changer for the Chargers. Because,
right.
You know, it's a swing. What were they? Was it 14-13 at the time?
Yes.
So it would have been going from the Patriots being up by six,
right.
Most likely, to the Chargers keeping the ball and maybe even increasing their lead. I thought at the time that that was possibly going to change the outcome in favor of the Chargers, but then mm-hmm. a few plays later, Akeem Ayers made a nice play, dropping into coverage, picking off Rivers, and Patriots went on and scored and never looked back after that. But
right.
And it had the opposite effect, too, of igniting a spark behind the Patriots because they felt like, you know, during the break, John, you guys – I don't think saw this because I think they went to commercial, but they were showing the replay in Qualcomm Stadium, and Browner was irate. Vince Wilfork went up to the officials a couple of times and was trying to plead his case.
Yeah, right.
Now, obviously, that the officials can't change a call based on what they see on the review. That's part of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But they all saw it. Everybody in the stadium saw it, and they all saw that there might have been a mistake there. So I think that helped ignite a fire under the Patriots, and that ended up helping them more. In the long run.
Yeah, I think it did too. If you'll stick around for a minute or two.
Yeah, I got a couple of minutes.
We'll metamorphosize here in this program. We'll kind of move a different direction as well and welcome in the one and only Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com and a proud graduate.
Oh.
We're happy to say of Patriots Football Weekly.
And let me also just add that you were asking about our trip to San Diego earlier.
Yes.
I had to stop this man from attacking the voice of the Patriots, Bob Soucy.
Really?
In what was turning into quickly a raucous tag team wrestling match at the Patriots fan party
what
the
happened?
Night before.
Well, you knew Scott Zolak was behind it. Whenever there's some type of WWE type acts here.
Yeah. Where's the beef?
Yep. That's it. We heard that too, didn't we?
We did.
Eric?
We heard that whole call all over again, live and in person.
Great scene, John. Eric was there. Fan party. Saturday night, the one Robert Kraft showed up to the night before the game, and a great crowd, knocked it out at Players Sports Bar, and mm-hmm. Zolak's always starting trouble, and
mm-hmm.
he says, how much would we pay right now to see Mike Reese and Bob Soucy in a steel cage wrestling match?
But he couldn't even get the word match. He couldn't even finish the sentence.
And I started
and
running
Reese
up on stage.
Was running
I said, that's
up on
my
stage,
cue, you know?
And I had to protect my guy Soucy.
Yeah.
I mean
man,
it's a Eric's team effort.
Eric's strong.
I mean.
Got me with a clothesline.
It was
worse than the Browner hit.
I did. I mean, you're lucky there wasn't a folding chair because I would have had to come down
wow.
on you with that one too.
Wow! Oh, the stories
stuff.
And the things you miss on the road, unbelievable.
But don't worry, there'll be if they continue.
Is there a
the
rematch?
Playoffs, oh, if they go to the Super Bowl, yeah, we've already been called.
There's
out.
A rematch,
yeah.
John. I gotta tell you, it was the great week. It was really
it was,
a great week out there,
week.
And like that scene at the party, I thought was great. And the game itself, and the atmosphere,
yeah, we were just talking about.
And even afterwards, you know, players walking off the field and going to, you know, fans,
sure.
and, you know, giving them gloves
sure.
and acknowledging their presence.
And part of it, too, John, is that, you know, most stadiums, we're in a closed press box. So
yeah,
we don't really hear the crowd as much,
yeah.
which I think may have contributed a little bit to this. But still, anybody who was there, you could see the lower sections behind the Patriots bench from end zone to end zone were almost entirely made up of Patriots fans. Anytime the Patriots did something good, roar went up, and I at times felt like I was at Gillette.
That's fascinating.
It was so
That's
loud.
Fascinating that it turned into that situation. And I got a phone call from a couple of people in San Diego yesterday here on the show that said, hey, we turned it into Gillette West. Qualcomm should get
it
renamed.
It was incredible.
And the
it
fact,
really was.
And there were several people that backed it up, you know, via the various forms of communication we have here that the locals in Southern California really turned out big time.
And you could feel it even before the game, like Tom Brady runs out for his warm-up,
yeah.
and the place erupted. And Brady even acknowledged
right,
it.
He fist bumped
to the fans before, like as he's walking. So that connection between Patriots fans and players was made before the opening kickoff.
Yeah, it was tremendous. And I, in my post-game analysis, tried to use some play on words with electricity, charge, energy, because they were playing the Chargers.
It's a word.
But, stay tuned. We're going to get to a little wordplay.
Wordplay's coming up.
But that seemed to be, to me, that was the story of the game, was the energy from start to finish, whether it was the Patriots making plays or the Chargers making plays, that stadium was rocking the whole time. And even, I thought this was a little bit tactless on the part of the Chargers, the Qualcomm Stadium people, when Mike Seifers was hurt. All through the timeout and everything, they continued to play the loud music and pump the fans up. And I'm thinking, there's a guy here, you don't know what's wrong with him. He's seriously hurt down on the ground. Yeah, they have to bring a cart out.
I noticed that on the coverage,
That's not the time to be pumping up the crowd. But and that little diversion there. But the whole game, I thought, from start to finish was full of energy. Unlike, I was just telling John, any I can remember, the momentum swings, the energy of the crowd.
Had
it was
a playoff
really,
feel, right?
It
definitely had a playoff
did.
Feel.
And,
right?
Mike, when we were out there, I think locals were telling us, or at least I think you were part of this, that for months the Chargers have been looking forward to this game.
Right.
The team, the fans, they've been circling this on the calendar. They made it a powder blue game.
Yeah.
They were really looking at this as a huge game.
Yep.
Whereas I think the Patriots are so used to treating every game like a huge game, or every game not as a huge game. Every game is the same. That it, not that it didn't mean as much to them, but they were able to deal, I think, more with when things got a little out of control. They were able to deal with their emotions a little bit better because they're so used to that.
Right.
And I loved how Belichick explained his view of the whole thing when he was sort of back on the sideline, going over a couple things, and had his back to the field, and he hears these cheers and loud cheers. He's thinking to himself, what's going on? And usually you hear that when he's working, with the defense. That usually means something bad happened for the Patriots' offense.
Right.
But in this case,
it was something good.
And that was so, it was just so unique. It was and I just appreciated it.
It was almost like a Super Bowl.
It was like a Super Bowl, with the back and forth, And I liked your point about how the press box was open. So we could really feel it more,
right.
And I did just step back at one point. And John, you've been in this, for so long. I think sometimes you never know what you're going to get in these environments. Like you could feel it in the pregame, but what if it was a blowout after the first quarter?
And then it fell flat.
So it all fell into place to make it one of the more special regular season environments that I've ever been a part of.
I second that. I was telling him I think it was one of the most exciting games, too, with the momentum swings.
Turned out to be that way with the momentum swings.
It really did. And it wasn't a high-scoring game by, Patriots standards, at least the way they've been playing, but it was still, I think, an exciting, competitive game.
Sort of along the lines of why it felt like a playoff game because, you had defenses making plays, you had, offensive guys making plays, you had mistakes, you had turnovers,
game separated the two in the standings, so if the Patriots had lost, now you would have had basically a four-way tie among all of the division leaders in the AFC for the 1 and 2 seeds. It was definitely a playoff-type game with a playoff type atmosphere. It lived up to it. It was great.
So how do we transfer that now? Bring it back home here on Sunday. Seems like it wouldn't been home in forever, but I mean, you've had a couple of weeks. You had a home game 2 weeks away, home game 2 weeks away, and now home game again. And now you're going to end up with two home games in the last three games of the regular season, all against divisional opponents. Which I think is kind of cool that the NFL did this by giving divisional games. We all know that this game means more than probably the other two will, because Miami most likely needs to win out to really have a realistic chance of obtaining the postseason themselves. So they're back. Backs are to the wall. We might, it's possible, conceivable, we get just as good an effort, if not better, from Miami than we did from San Diego last week.
Yeah, to me, the my biggest question this week is there any hangover, for the Patriots? And I'll just speak for myself. Like, I'm exhausted right now, after 9 days away, coming across the, the country, the time change, and I didn't play a game. So I just try to put myself in their shoes and say, you're coming home, there's an element of comfortability, you know, to being home. I think human nature tells us sure. to exhale
Good
a
point.
Little bit.
Right.
Now, the one thing that could go in their favor, guys, is, you know, this Miami team might be ready to fold up its tents, pack up its U-Hauls, and get to the golf course. I mean, I know they need it. I mean,
they do.
But what did they show last week to give you the feeling that they're going to come in here and really fight?
The thing that I'm hanging my hat on this week is the fact that it's a hat and t-shirt game,
right?
As this team always likes to mention. They have a chance to wrap up the division, which is always their goal going in, their first goal going into a season. Wrap up the AFC East, get yourself into the playoffs, then I think they can exhale. I think they, as you know, some of us were trying to bring that up to players today in the locker room and even at Brady's presser, and I think they were trying to downplay that. I don't buy it for a second. I think they all know what's at stake, and I think they'll give just enough effort this week against the team that I think you're right is ready to maybe get ready for the offseason, get this job done.
Keeps them on edge a little bit. Then maybe
they can rest, because then they go to New York against a team that really has nothing to play for next week. And then at that point.
See, but I like that game in another week as a statement game by the Jets players, because they have to feel like Rex Ryan's gone. He's gone. He's got to be gone. And so they do love their coach there. And I think that they would love nothing better than to stick one right up the Patriots' wazoo next week, which to me is going to give the edge, all the edge that the Patriots really should have to have for the Jets. So, you know, again, there's always something to play for.
Well, and a lot depends on what happens this week, too, and I think the San Diego-Denver game. Because if San Diego at home against the Broncos can somehow pull off what I think is going to be an upset.
You like them. You like the Chargers.
I think they have a chance. Yeah,
I think
they do. I really do. At home, they usually play the Broncos pretty tough. Mm-hmm. And coming off, well, they came to East, beat a good Ravens team, which I was a little surprised by. Came home, were emotional against New England. They lost that one. I think in the division, I think that's a tough out for Denver.
That Jets game, you know, after this one. Reminds me a little bit. Remember, was it two seasons ago when they had to go to Jacksonville late in the year, and Jacksonville was, you know, a 1 or 2 win team. Chad Henne was the quarterback, and that tests your mental toughness. Mm-hmm. You know, you're playing a team that has nothing to play for. You're human. You know, they have 2 wins at the time.
Yeah.
So we'll learn. You know, we always say, what do we learn about the team every week? We probably learn something new about every team. And I think in that game, you know, it's one thing. Even though I think the hangover effect this week is something I want to watch, just based on, you know, being across the country, coming back, they do have something to play for.
Oh,
the AFC East title. Mm-hmm. Let's assume they win it. Next week you go to New York playing a team like that. I think we'll see how mentally tough and mature they can handle that situation. That would be the storyline for that week.
Right, because they're still playing at that point. But assuming they get by the Dolphins and they have the AFC East, they're still playing for 1 or 2, the 1 or 2 seed. Which is, I think, critical going into the playoffs. You can't,
good point.
You know, just because you win your division and just because you get a bye.
That's right.
I think the way this team plays on the road sometimes,
right.
I think you much rather play at home. And so they can't afford to take any games off.
And I would appreciate them being at home because
I
don't
want to
travel.
Right.
So I mean, we don't root or anything like that unless it benefits us.
Right. And then you root real hard. We totally get that. All right, before we move on here, let me get your thoughts then, Eric, first of all, on setting the table for the week and where you feel like, you know, the game on Sunday with the Dolphins really will come down to in terms of what's at stake for the Patriots. You talked about the hat and T-shirt game, what's at stake for the Dolphins. Probably need to win out, whether or not they're capable. And really, aren't these teams vastly different than what we saw in week one?
Oh, God, absolutely. Yeah, it's two completely different teams, I think. I mean, you had a Miami team that at the time was, I think, feeling their oats a little bit. I think they felt like they were believing a lot of the offseason hype where they're the team that can challenge the Patriots in the AFC East. Then they beat them in the first game. I think they were really feeling confident. New England, as we saw, was just they didn't know who they were. They were still trying to figure out who their offensive line was. They were still trying to figure out the best way to use Darrelle Revis. They didn't have Brandon Browner. Brandon LaFell wasn't making plays. Gronk wasn't Gronk. It's light years difference between the two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dolphins, I think, have, while I think they're still a better team than they were last year and the year before that, and probably still the second best team in the AFC, they're no competition for for New England.
Yeah, and you mentioned you know, all those players. A couple that come to mind for me. I mean, Akeem Ayers was with the Titans week.
Exactly.
Jonathan Casillas was with the Buccaneers. Right. Yeah. Alan Branch was a free agent. That's one point that I think is starting to generate a little more momentum than it had in the past, that those were three really good in-season moves by the Patriots and Bill Belichick. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time, and I think rightfully so, highlighting some of the deficiencies personnel-wise. Like, why can't they draft and develop a receiver, I think is a very fair question, you know. And we've debated that, I think, as vigorously as we debate those issues and some of the shortcomings they have personnel-wise.
Cornerback as well.
And cornerback is another good one, you know, struggling to draft and develop at that position. I think we wouldn't be fair if we didn't balance out the ledger a little bit and say, you know, this team addresses deficiencies on the fly as well, if not better, than any team in the league. I mean, I think what Ayers has done has surprised me, because when they acquired him, you know, you reach out to people and say, what's the deal with this guy? And they say, oh, I'm not sure how much he loves football. You know, it doesn't seem like their type of guy. And then he comes in and sort of the environment brings out the best in him. And the last six games, I think he's played like over 70% of the defensive snaps, 13 tackles, 3 sacks, the big interception. I mean, I never thought when they acquired him would be saying 6 games later, where would they be without Akeem Ayers?
Well, you know, and that's a good point about, you know, asking people about a player like that, because I even go back to Randy Moss, one of the best players of all time in football, was on the Raiders, who were a moribund, still are, franchise. Akeem Ayers was on a Titans team that is not going anywhere. When you're on a team that's losing, you don't, I think, have as much fun playing the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's just human nature.
Yep.
So for a guy like Ayers, especially Ayers, I mean, Moss was playing in Oakland, but not having fun. Ayers was a guy who was a high draft pick, and then a new administration comes in coaching-wise, and they say, really not getting a good fit with you, and they move him from a starting role to more of a backup and hardly playing at all role. Of course he's going to be unhappy. Of course he's not going to feel like he loves football. You're not playing him. And you bring him to a team that wants him, that is giving him a role, that's winning, that has a chance to play in January, which you're not used to. Of course he's going to be happy. And you saw right away, the first game he produced with a sack. And then the week after he played a little bit more and got another play, and has been nothing but, I think, a great move personnel-wise. And adding Casillas, helping out with the play calling last week after being here less than a month. It's miraculous. Mm-hmm. Alan Branch coming in and helping out with Silver Ceiling in run stuffing. You know, they lose, I think, why is his name escaping me?
Where?
Which one?
Defensive
Chandler line.
Jones?
No, from, he's in Arizona now.
Tommy Kelly. Yeah.
They lose Tommy Kelly, and they go from a 4-3 to a 3-4, and I'm thinking, what in the heck are they doing? And now they're making it work with the players that they've brought in.
On the Tommy Kelly thing, it's interesting. I mean, I was pretty hard on him for that, because it seemed like they cut him, you know. Even though I thought he wasn't a lock to make the team coming into the season, I think based on what they had, you say, why are they cutting Tommy Kelly? And I think a lot of people felt that way, especially based on the way he's played in Arizona. He's played very well. But I think one thing that you pick up some intelligence along the way, and you always be careful, you know, you don't want it to be a smear campaign or anything like that. The player's not here. But he really wasn't showing. Like, if you go back and watch here's what someone told me. Go watch the Redskins preseason game, the Washington preseason game, and tell me if that's a player that is showing that he wants to be here. And I think sometimes, like, we don't get the full story.
Yeah, but it's preseason, Mike. I mean, can you really get a picture on somebody's intent in the preseason?
Well, it was preseason. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike. No. I say it was preseason. It was also the first time they started going to the 3-4. And he was more a 4-3 guy.
Yeah.
The way they were using him. So I think maybe he sees that and he's like, you know, you're playing me out of position. I don't really care for this. What's going on? Maybe he sees handwriting that's on the wall, or maybe that isn't on the wall, that he sees and perceives it to be that way.
And he doesn't go along with
it.
And so maybe he's slightly, you know, disgruntled behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're not going to tell you that publicly, but I think that's part of the story that hadn't been told, that in this forum, it's good to talk about, because I happen to believe it's good insight in terms of, I'm not necessarily saying I agree with it, but I think I understand it better now when that is brought into the discussion?
It had a lot to do with, you know, him thinking he was not going to be able to make some of his contract incentives and things along those lines, that if he's going to be involved in a rotation, and if the defensive line is going to actually have one less spot available for that rotational player to fit into, why am I going to stay here?
And, John, that's one thing I have a little bit of a, I don't want to say an issue, but a nitpick with the team where I get uneasy.
We're good at nitpicking.
I get uneasy, guys, on the contracts that have playtime incentives, because to me it puts in conflict individual goals with team goals. Mm-hmm. And what do they say is, you know, the most important thing here? It's the team goals. And like Vince Wilfork as an example, like I think that the staff is doing some really smart things here. The last, like this last game, played about 50% of the snaps in that game, maybe a little bit more. I think he's got a marker that he needs to hit to get paid, and I gotta believe he's keeping track of that.
Oh, I would think so, not him.
You know, someone in his family,
right.
You know? So to me, I get a little uneasy, and not that they're listening to us looking for suggestions, but, you know, I like the idea of aligning those, say, hey, it's, you know, it's 75%, but if we win, you know, 12 games and you're on the active roster, you know, we'll drop it down to 50%.
Well, yeah,
because that's the spirit of what you're trying to, you know what I mean?
I think that's kind of what they did with Vollmer earlier this season with his reworked contract, because at the time, he and Solder were at least one drive a game were yielding to
Marcus Cannon.
Mm-hmm. And that may have, down the line, cumulatively, if they had continued that, affected Vollmer's individual playing time incentives. So they reworked the deal, and part of it was to lower the number, the percentage of snaps that he needed to reach those certain bonus levels, which were $1 million and $2 million, I believe. So I think in that spirit, they did.
Yeah.
They helped the player out. So
definitely,
they acknowledge that, I think, and at least are trying to, when they can, make sure that the team and the personal goals are aligned.
Mike, thoughts on the game with Miami this weekend and where it might break down for the Patriots, where you feel like the trouble spots might be based on what we know of the Dolphins going into this? And again, as we suggested earlier, these two teams are vastly different from what we saw back in September. Yeah.
So in the week one game, the Patriots really struggled with those inside zone runs.
Yes, they
did. I think it was 191 yards for the Dolphins.
Got hammered
game,
pretty good by
number.
Yeah. Even though the same person, well, personnel is different.
Yeah,
now,
a little different.
Yeah.
So that would be the first area to look at just based on what hurt them in week one. And then two other things, you know, I think Dolphins' run defense looks vulnerable. I think they're 22nd in the league in terms of rushing yards allowed per game, up over 120, and they're 28th in average yards allowed per rush, 4.4 per game. So LeGarrette Blount, maybe Jonas Gray, we see a little more of him. I know that's sort of a hot topic among fans, you know, want to know why he's been buried. You know, hey, he was accountable, you know, and They kept them down for that one game, but we haven't seen him in the last two that much either.
Scared the football three times.
You know,
so maybe
a game for him to get back on it. And then the other thing I would say is, you know, based on some of the struggles Nate Solder had in this last game, you know, look at the defensive ends, you know, and Cameron Wake is obviously most likely going to be on the other side against Sebastian Vollmer, but he's a game wrecker. And I thought he made a big play in that week one game, you know, to really turn things around. So offensive tackles, pass rush, that'd be an area of concern for the Patriots.
Any concern as well, though, that where it looked like running the ball against Green Bay a couple of weeks ago resulted in the few attempts that we really saw, and then you're seeing Miami again, and there's a chance to run here, and what do you do? I mean, you got to wonder. I mean, did the Patriots throw us all a curveball, or is that something we might see again? Is that going to be, you know, a rule rather than an exception?
I thought they misread it a little bit in Green Bay, personally. I thought maybe overthought it, and I know they struggled to run the ball on the first drive. I thought they got away from it
pretty quick, gave it up too early on the next one.
You know, part of that was that hurry-up run game, which I wouldn't mind for their sake to see them maybe put that on the shelf,
right,
you know, a little bit going forward.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to work too well.
I feel like the run game is so important for them, especially with the offensive line, which I think probably, you know, coming off not its best effort. It just gives those guys so much more confidence to know, like, early in the game, you know, that you ran it, and it settles them down a little bit. So, yeah, John, there's obviously a concern because sometimes they do come out of left field, and you're like, wow, this seems obvious. Run it against the 30th-ranked run defense, and I know Tom Brady said afterwards that that stat was a bit misleading, but didn't look too misleading to me when they were running the ball down their throat in the fourth quarter.
Right.
You know, would have liked to have seen him stick with it a little bit earlier in that game.
All right. Can you stick around for a question or two?
Surely.
All right. Then in that regard, let's educate ourselves here momentarily. Let's enlighten ourselves. Let's kind of move on. And we'll let Mike actually enjoy
part of this. Yeah.
Enjoy the absolute brilliance that is Eskel. Kevin?
The absolute brilliance that is not Kevin Collins.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to pull up your britches, put on your Argyle sweaters, puff on your corn cob pipes, and gather round the fire for Eric Scalavino's Word of the Day.
No word of a lie. He's got the Argyle sweater on today.
I don't have the pipe. And I wish we had a fireplace, because that would be really nice.
Well, we should do that. We should put that on the back monitor.
At least have the Yule log.
Like we do on the big ribbon boards here at Gillette, you know, when it's cold, right?
Well, as you know, and we'll have to educate Mike on this, we do this little segment where I come in, I educate the listeners on it in a new, more, let's say, highbrow word, a rare word you don't really hear.
In other
often.
Words, a word that goes right over our heads, right?
I like it.
But I try to give the, when I give the word in a sentence, I try to tie it into what we're talking about with the Patriots.
Ooh.
I try to, you know.
Do you have it now?
I do have it now. No, I have it now.
Did you come up with it? Like, did you have it coming into the studio?
I did. I had it coming in today, but our discussion has led me to a little bit feeling more confident about using the word of the day today. Based on what we were just talking about. And I just learned this word last week out on the trip in San Diego, John, while reading an article in National Geographic.
Okay.
It's palimpsest.
Say that again?
Palimpsest.
Palimpsest.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a tongue twister. Palimpsest. P-A-L-I-M-P-S-E-S-T. Palimpsest.
Palimpsest.
Yes.
And that is the correct pronunciation?
Yes, it is.
All right, now I'm going to challenge you to use palimpsest in a related sentence to our discussion today.
Okay. Entering this week, week 15?
15.
This week 15 game between the Patriots and Dolphins, these two teams are palimpsests of what they were in week one.
Palimpsests, plural.
Yes.
Of what they were in week one. So let's just say it's got to be something that is what? Different? Opposite? Transformed? What?
I'll give you the official first meaning and then the secondary meaning, which is more the original meaning of it is it's a manuscript or a piece of writing on which the original writing has been wiped off or expunged to make room for later writing.
Okay.
Now the secondary meaning is related to that. It's something that has been reused or altered but still bears traces of its original form.
Okay. And that would be appropriate because in both cases where the Patriots and the Dolphins are concerned,
it's completely two different teams, but they're still the Patriots and the Dolphins.
Exactly.
From week one.
Is there a test after this?
No.
Because I was dozing off a little bit there. I was actually, as Eric was explaining, I was looking at the standings in the Patriots Football Weekly picks contest. Eric is ahead.
Yes, he is, which is why you should pay attention to him. As much as we hate to admit it around here, he kind of owns the other guys. So.
He's great. Yeah. You're great, Eric.
There you go.
Good stuff, John. Man. Palimpsest. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, that's a first. I thought you were going to talk about, that's the growth I had in my butt earlier today. I like peel off and have the doctor look at.
Please
but no.
Leave me alone, Eric. My bottom is really sore.
That's a palimpsest. Oh, okay. Oh, well, we come up with something anyway. I know. We always have to dumb it down. You know me.
No one does it better than John.
That's exactly right, baby. That's exactly right. Dumb it down for a laugh. All right, Big E. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you on Sunday.
All right, Eric.
All right. Let's do this then, because we got a couple of phone calls hanging on, if that's all right with you,
sure.
Mike, because, you're a superstar. We get to see you on SportsCenter, you're doing all these live hits from Gillette Stadium, and people are like going, wow, I knew him when.
Yeah.
So, I figured we'd take a couple of calls there you go. Right. You got to remember where your roots are.
That's right.
You understand where you came from.
Absolutely.
Just for those that might be recent additions to this program and to our programming here, we've been doing this for 14 years, so the Patriots have been way out in front of everybody else in the NFL in terms of team-related programming. When were you a writer? When were you on the staff of PFW, and when did you get your start?
So 1997 was my first year at Patriots Football Weekly. Fred Kirsch, who is still the editor-in-chief, mm-hmm. and you know, hired me for the job. I was forever grateful, John, because I had a stack of rejection letters from, you know, around the country at newspapers. And
as we all get.
Yeah, and I'll never forget. And I thought about it 2 weeks ago because of where we were. You know, first game, preseason, 1997 at Lambeau Field. And I said, wow, you know, on the team charter, traveling to Lambeau Field, I said, and they're paying me for this, you know? And
I think I actually remember that.
I couldn't get over it, John. Yeah. And so I was there for two seasons, 97, 98, the first two seasons of Pete Carroll's regime. And, you know, my dream all along was to hopefully work at the Boston Globe someday, like Will McDonough. And when I went to talk to them, they said, you know, you might consider, you know, trying to work at a newspaper unaffiliated with the team just because, you know, I think there's – and I don't think it's necessarily fair because I don't think the team publication gets any additional access that –
They don't.
You know, others, you know.
So these guys will tell you that. I mean, yeah. BFW guys are treated as regular media.
Yeah, and we were too back then, but I think the perception of it is such that, you know, the Globe probably wouldn't hire you straight from there. So I went to – you know, a newspaper in my hometown of Framingham, Mass. After that, and still covered the team. But yeah, that's how it started.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's and then, of course, you ended up at the Globe.
At the Globe, yeah. And I thought I'd be there forever. That's the way things go. And then
ESPN came waving his big bucks.
Yeah, they came, but also too at the time, John, like the business changed so much. Yeah, you know, with the web and all that.
The digital presence of the industry.
Big.
You know, gave you an opportunity to do some different things, which I know is important for a lot of reporters.
And also at the time, if you recall, the Globe was up for sale, so there was a lot of uncertainty with, you know, what was going to happen there. I had a daughter on the way at the time, so it all sort of was a perfect storm and aligned as such. And, you know, I just say it's been great to be affiliated with this team, you know, and to cover this team. They play at such a high level. And I just really appreciate it, especially after this last couple weeks. Like, I thought that trip, Green Bay and then San Diego, that was an all-timer for me. That was right up there at the top in terms of real memorable experience, both for the games and the interaction, you know, with the unbelievable fans that are out there that you connect with through the job.
We hear from a lot of West Coast Patriot fans.
Yeah.
I mean, we get phone calls regularly from Oregon, from California, from Denver, all over. You know, it's heavily in the western part of the country.
And, John, I'm not just saying this because I'm on the program. I would say it if we were off the air. That was one thing I noticed when I was at that fan party on Saturday night in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
These people are like diehard fans for, you know, Patriots and progress. I'm not sure if I'm using the right verbiage, but I think they connect through this team, through these programs that you guys are doing here. So
that's the whole idea. Which is why I've always thought that the Crafts were way out in front of everything, which is why I was thrilled to start this particular show as a project with PFW Progress 14 years ago, because I thought, you know, there would be a market. It would take some time to cultivate, and we're still cultivating. You always cultivate, because the moment you do that is the moment you kiss it goodbye. But, you know, you're appealing to different audiences now and really spreading the brand, and I think it has a lot to do, we hope that it has a lot to do with the national and, let me add, international appeal of this team, because we have a heavy following in the U.K., throughout Europe, in Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. I mean, it's amazing.
Definitely.
It really is.
And I would, you know, just – I would add this, and this is from someone who grew up in the area. And, you know, I can't say that I'm a diehard Red Sox fan, but, like, I'll use today as an example. You know, some great pieces about John Lester. And I read this stuff, John, and I say, you know, I get the passion for the Red Sox, but I feel personally that this is more of a football area.
It has been, I think, for 20 years-ish.
Exactly, 20 years-ish. The Red Sox have them from a time standpoint going back.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I want to see if I can articulate this the right way, there's not the same number of voices and level of voices that would have the same reaction and layers of reaction to what happened with Lester, you know, to something that happened with the Patriots. Or I'm trying to compare, you know, certain things. I feel like the Patriots, they're... We could do even more, and this market is ready for more. And that's why I love this stuff that we're doing, because what I'm trying to say is I think there is an appetite for high level, all the time football, like an NFL network type, you know, consistent presence specific to the Patriots. So, for example, I think you could have a football show every night on a talk radio station all throughout the year, 12 months a year. and I think it would do outstanding. Like you see, like you have a baseball show or something. Why not football? I don't. You know what I mean?
We're probably ready for that here in New England.
I think we could probably do that.
Totally. Yeah. So maybe that's something I'll throw out to Fred Kirsch.
Yeah. And John, but John, my point is like, you know, I think some of like the dominant voices from like the Globe 20 years ago used to set, you know, set the agenda around here. And I think obviously times have changed a little bit, but like the dominant voices are baseball guys, you know, like Dan Shaughnessy and that group. You know, I think as this generation comes up the ranks this 20 years, you know, I think maybe that changes and the football becomes more dominant, you know, and maybe I'm dreaming, but I just feel like that can happen.
I think we're moving that direction. You know, it's one of the things that, you know, Fred and I have even had discussions about. One of the reasons why we started, you know, I started writing the column that appears on Tuesdays, The View from Above, because he was interested in a fan perspective or, you know, someone who was listening to what the fans were saying, which you do often because you get the mailbag thing every week, so you get people emailing you, but someone who takes a sort of an above-it-all view. You know, kind of listening a little bit of that, listening a little bit of this, and some that we're going to keep up, you know, 52 weeks a year. Whether it's, you know, the dead time in May before OTAs get started, or whether it's, you know, playoff push time like it is right now, there's still an appetite for it. So that's one of the things, one of the reasons behind starting that, and we may do that with expanded programming.
And this stuff is great for that. An example from last week that comes to mind is, you know, it's Friday, the end of the week, and they had placed Aaron Dobson on injured reserve, and they have an open roster spot. And I remember leading off the day with a blog entry on my predictions on who might fill
the roster spot. Yeah.
And, John, that generated discussion, but it wouldn't have mattered if people didn't care. But what I'm trying to say is we care here in New England about the Patriots' 53rd roster spot because that's the level we're at. I don't think it's like that in San Diego.
I don't think it's that way in Jacksonville.
It's like Jacksonville. No, you know what I mean? And that's my point. And I feel like sometimes, and I'm not talking about specific to this because this is unbelievable, what we're, you know, you guys are doing on the web and all, and this team publication has been ahead of the curve, all that stuff.
For quite a while.
I guess I'm looking at it more from like the outside perspective, you know, what would be above the fold from the old school newspaper standpoint. You know, I think to me, this is about the Patriots, about football, and I think as like the Chris Gaspers of the Globe and you know, guy who covered the team.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
bright young guy.
Yeah.
Good reporter.
I think that this football is only going to get bigger and bigger.
It's good. It's a good spot to be. All right, to that end, before we let you go, I got a couple of questions for you here. Josh from California writes in, John, just had a quick question for Mike. In his opinion, what are the top three positions of worry heading into the playoffs?
Okay. So top three positions
of worry heading into the playoffs.
All right, so this is off the top of my head. Think about it. How about the snapper, John? You know, I know that sounds silly, but, you know, a little uneasy on that situation.
Sure.
Based on what we've seen, I guess I'd say, would anyone be shocked if there was a bad snap that cost him a game, you know, based on what we've seen? So I don't know if that would be number one, but it was the first thing that came to mind.
Rob Ninkovich does continue to take reps at the spot.
Yep. How about backup receiver? You know, if something happened to LaFell or Edelman, you know, you worry that they would have someone capable to step in there. And let's talk about high-class problems. I've done two of the three, and I've done the snapper and backup receiver,
right? Yeah, that's good.
And let's see. Let's go for a third here. Secondary I feel pretty good about, but why don't we say, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth, you know, cornerbacks, you know, like we saw in Green Bay. I don't think many teams will be able to do what Green Bay did, but I have no doubts about Revis, no doubts about Browner, but they did pretty well when they were targeting Logan Ryan, Kyle Arrington, and Alphonso Dennard. So if a team can hit that option, you know, maybe that would be something.
Might take somebody
about.
Of Aaron Rodgers' ilk to do that, right?
So they're pretty well. I mean, and I know some people might say offensive line based on what we've seen, but I think in the end they're going to be okay there. So look, that's. I had to search pretty hard, you know, to come up with three things off the top of my head. To me, those are pretty, I guess, in Robert Kraft's words, would be high-class problems to have.
It kind of tells you where you stand as well. All right, let's see if we can experiment with this one real quick. Pat in Agawam, thanks for hanging in there, Pat. You're in the playbook with Mike Reese. You still around?
I'm still around. What's going on, Jonathan?
Right, thanks, Pat.
How you doing, man?
Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Hey, before I pose my question, I got an idea for you for you know, for instead of reviewing anything, why don't they just treat penalties like touchdowns and turnovers and they just review every one?
That would probably drag the game into a four-hour realm, which I can't imagine anyone has an appetite for. So I think the best way to do it, and we were just discussing this before you walked in the studio, Mike, I think the best way to do this in light of, you know, what was said today, you know, by the National Football League on the Browner hit last week, is just to make anything reviewable. Coach has two reviews. It's all fair game. He's got two chances to use it if he doesn't like the call.
Yep.
But anything is reviewable if he throws the flag.
I like that. I like that. And I was surprised today just that the topic came up that the league was as honest as it was about the hit.
They admitted they made a mistake.
I mean, that's the way I viewed it. I know some interpreted the remarks as, you know, it's still a foul based on this, you know, little bit of contact to the face mask. I didn't view it that way. I viewed it as, look, he said helmet to helmet. There was no helmet to helmet there. It's a close play. I don't think he's going to get fined, and I think that was basically an acknowledgement of, hey, this is a tough call in real time. In retrospect, he probably missed it,
right.
And that's the way I took it.
Right.
And Mike, for you, I know you kind of covered this, but do you think that they target Cameron Wake to go up against Nate Solder, considering how the past couple weeks he struggled, and you know he did, you know, during the middle of the season he kind of cleaned things up, but he hasn't had a real consistent year this year.
It's a great question, because Cameron Wake usually, Pat, lines up on the other side, and so he's usually going to be against your right tackle. But in this case, do you switch him over? They don't normally do that, so that would really be out of character for them. Why not give it a try? I mean, you're basically need to win to save your season, to keep your hopes alive. I think you try that and everything else. I mean, maybe even move him in on the interior, like we saw the Chargers do with Melvin Ingram, who number 54, who gave Solder some problems, but at times they moved him inside, mm-hmm. and he gave the guard some problems. To me, Cameron Wake, game wrecker, anything you can do to free him up, absolutely give it a try. To me, Vollmer's probably the last guy you want to be going up against right now, because he's probably been the most consistent and solid of the five linemen they have. So I like the thought. I like the thought that you have.
All right. Thank you for that, Pat. Let's see if we can squeeze one more in before we let Mike go. Here's Isaac in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Isaac, you're in the playbook.
Hey, Joe. What's up?
Hey, Isaac.
Hey, Isaac.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
How you doing?
Doing good. Hey, I got a question for you. Well, not really a question, but I got some stuff I want to talk about Miami, and like, I was looking back at the game from week one. I know that was so long ago, but I seen what they were giving our defense a lot of problems for with the option, the re-option with the quarterback and running back, with the defense had to be accountable for the quarterback and the running back. And I see they was really burning us with that. So do you think that we'll probably see another heavy dose of that from Miami this Sunday?
Yeah, good. Another good question, Isaac. John, this is what I'm talking about.
You
know, we got high-level discussion here with people who really understand the game and are passionate
about it. These people are smart,
Mike. Fantastic,
John. These people are smart.
It's fantastic. I could talk all day about it. I love it. You know, the first thing, Isaac, is it's going to be a sub-defense game. The Dolphins play a lot of three receivers, so you're going to have Mike Wallace out there with Brian Hartline and Jarvis Landry, their impressive rookie. So that means you're going to be in your sub-defense, probably your nickel defense, so you want to focus on the defensive ends, Rob Ninkovich, Akeem Ayers, maybe Chandler Jones comes back, and Ryan Tannehill runs that consistently. He'll keep the ball. I haven't seen him pitch it out as much, but
right,
he's a threat to run, and you absolutely, that will be, I bet Bill Belichick every week gives him, you know, this is what we have to do to win the game. That's what he tells the players first thing. And I would think that will be close to the top of the list.
I would think that it, in some form, you know, they would have to fill the middle of the field with options, because Tannehill has shown he can't go deep or doesn't go deep well. And he does hit the short to mid-range pass fairly well. So because of that, my guess is that they're going to dare him to throw over the top as best as they can. He's going to see a lot of coverage areas in the middle. And yeah, we might see them do the zone read, or at least some type of option there to get the Patriots front four to front seven to commit. And see if they can't, you know, beat them around the end.
Definitely. So, you know, containing the ends, containing and
yes.
keeping them inside. And, you know, you mentioned that, and you're right, John, in terms of that reminds me of the game last year in Miami in December, which, if I recall correctly, they really did do exactly what you said. And they were forcing Tannehill to make throws to the outside parts of the field. And by golly, he made them.
Yeah,
I think That surprised
but
them.
But maybe with the coverage options that the Patriots have now, they're going to try to bait him into that, knowing that, hey, our guys aren't going to get beat in man coverage.
Two words, right?
Right.
Revis Island.
Yep.
I mean, it's a big
Absolutely.
Difference when you have
I
that.
Totally agree. Squeeze one more. Dave in Connecticut. You're in the playbook. Hey, Dave.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good, man.
Hey, Dave.
Hey, John, I just want to I didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday, and, you know, I listened to the show last night, and it's really not a nitpick, but, you know, you went on this, you had a discussion about, you know, how Tom Brady's kind of fiery.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. That's something I love about Tom. I love Tom Brady when he has that chip on his shoulder. Okay. I love Tom Brady when he's headbutting the heck out of Benjamin Watson before the game.
Okay.
All right. You know, it's not directed at any player. I just think Brady has just this inner desire to be the best as a competitor. And you said to yourself, it just, you know, it boils out sometimes. And, you know, I mean, I would rather have that than, and I've never really in his career, as long as he's been a starter, seen him going after a coach or a position player.
Mm-hmm.
It's more directed at himself when he makes a bad pass. Or he makes a good pass.
I think that's true. His intensity does have a tendency to boil over, and I think a lot of people do appreciate that. And he's been very upfront with, hey, you know, it's not exactly a church service that we're going to out there, but I also think that he realizes that there's a time and a place for everything.
And it's done, you know, it's done specifically on the field. I mean, if you listen to his press conferences, he's never, you know, it's never pointing a finger at anybody.
Right.
You know, if there's blame to be held, you know, he's accountable to himself.
Sure.
You know, I love the my quarterback, you know, sitting with Chris Berman and Chris Berman asking him, hey, Tom, what's your favorite ring? The next one, he said.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, that's the kind of quarterback I want to have.
Agreed.
You know.
Agreed.
And, you know, I think this game against Miami is definitely winnable. All right. You know, we need to get the running game going, I think, you know. But once again, the offensive line is getting a little questionable, you know.
And they can get back to that if they actually decide to commit to that. Let's let Mike comment on that a little bit, Dave. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to mention something. I'm going to see if I can pull it up here as we're talking, just similar to what Dave was just mentioning.
Sure.
If you go to this interview on that Rob Gronkowski did with Lindsey Zarniak of ESPN as part of this ESPN The Magazine, I'll see if I can paraphrase it, but Gronkowski was sort of detailing his relationship with Brady, and he was saying that when he first got here, Brady used to ride him all the time. He thought Brady didn't like him. and he, you know, why is this guy always on my case, you know? And finally, one day, Brady says to him, hey, Gronk, you know I love you, right? It's just that I see the potential in you, and I just want you to be the best you can be. And Gronkowski said that he just needed to hear that, and once that happened, it was like he wanted to go through the roof for the guy, you know, and that changed everything for him, and that now their relationship is completely different. To me, that captures everything about Tom Brady, you know, and what he's all about. You see the fiery nature and all that stuff. This guy is the ultimate competitor, and he just loves the competitive arena, and it's the one place he can let it rip. I think it's phenomenal. I love watching him. I have no problem with the fire and what he's
bringing. Part
of
the reason why the TV cameras are always focused, and we talked about the blame, where should that be? And the consensus is, well, it's the television people's fault. But you can't blame them for doing it because of what you just said.
Yep. It's compelling. It's real. It's human. And, you know, we can debate about sportsmanship. I mean, I thought that was sort of silly to say that it's not showing good sportsmanship to me. It's the difference.
Yeah, the editorial that the Globe had a couple of weeks or so ago, where did that come from?
Yikes.
That is like so misguided.
Bad sportsmanship is you know,
poor sport
the
of the
Packers
week, they
game,
call them. And I'm
you know,
like,
it's like after
where
the
are you going?
That would be it, John. That would be like after the Packers game, Bill Belichick, you know, deciding not to go across the field and shake Mike McCarthy's hand,
which we saw quite the contrary. Right.
He was, as McCarthy explained, very gracious. I just think, to me, that's part of being a competitor. It's really caring about what you do and your craft and wanting to produce good results. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't, but you care. I'd hate to see indifference. That would bother me more.
No question. Two real quick ones here, and we'll let you go, Mike. And again, thank you for the time today.
Absolutely.
This one comes from Rick in Louisville, Kentucky. He says he used to write in a weekly question when you had the Patriot beat in the Globe. I later emailed you when you left for ESPN.com, and you answered me so graciously. Wow. I hope you can make it some year to witness the Kentucky Derby.
Ooh, I would love that.
And I'll go with you because I've never been.
That.
I've been to Churchill Downs.
Yeah.
I've never been for the Derby.
Yeah.
That's the next step.
I would like that. Right. And, you know, my only fear, John, is
you can be my date, but you have to wear the hat.
I was going to say. Hey, John, they might mistake me for a jockey down there based on my size, you know?
I love it.
Man.
I love it.
That's great. Hey, I appreciate that.
That was
really nice.
His question is, I hear that Bill Belichick is a completely different person away from football. There's a side of him that the public and all the haters don't see. Could you expand on this?
Ooh.
I find him to be a really fascinating person.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I can only expound upon it more from what people tell me than what I've personally experienced, because I think...
Not a lot of people experience it.
Well, I do think there's, you know, and I like this forum to talk about stuff like this. I think early in his tenure here, he did get close to maybe one or two reporters that, you know, visited him down on the island and maybe, you know, were out on that boat. And, you know, I think he maybe thought he got burned by that, you know, someone got close to him and then that person, you know, turned around and he felt maybe did some things mm-hmm. that weren't above board for mm-hmm. that matter. And I think from a media perspective, John, that probably had Bill put his guard up that much more. So we don't get close. And I would say that I from my perspective, I wouldn't want to be that close. It would be too close for me.
Yeah.
So I can only speak from what people tell me. But I think that if you're in that inner circle, when it comes to Bill Belichick and he trusts you, that he, you know, find him on Nantucket. You know, when he's out on that boat, and that's when he's at his best, or find him when he's around, you know, at a lacrosse game, you know, when no one's watching him and he feels he can just kick it back. You know, he's a different person, but he's going to set up that, you know, big barrier when he's in the public setting, when he's talking to the media or it's about football, because, you know, I think based on his past experiences, he's found that's the way to go.
I'm going to leave you, Mike, with this one from Chad of the ATL. Who decides to, you know, like most Patriots fans around here, you know, it's all great what we're doing now.
But
they're always looking ahead. Who will be the starting running back for the Pats in 2015?
Ooh, all right. So they have LeGarrette Blount under contract. Mm-hmm. They have James White under contract. Mm-hmm. They have Tyler Gaffney, who they claimed from the Panthers, who's recovering from ACL. And they have Jonas Gray. So I would say that those are the four we're going to choose from, because I'm going to guess Shane Vereen won't be back. I think they drafted James White. I don't know if I mentioned him, but
to be a potential.
Yeah, I think change of pace. I think the Shane thing is probably headed right now in the same direction as Wes. You know, he has the same agents as Wes Welker. Initial foray into talks there sort of led the sides to realize they might see it a little differently right now. No surprise, that happens all the time, but I mm-hmm. think they have to be prepared for any possibility there. So I'll take Vereen out of the equation. Ridley, I would guess, won't be back, only because he's going to, you know, probably take a one-year deal somewhere to try to get his stock back up. And when you're here, you see the way they fluctuate their usage of backs. Might not be viewed as the best spot for him, you know, to come back. So let's assume no Vereen, no Ridley. I think your top back next year is LeGarrette Blount, just like we've seen the last three games.
Did you have any personal problems with the way he left Pittsburgh and ended up here?
Sure. I think that's not the way you want to do it. And look, everyone makes mistakes, John. I know, you know, I mean, we both make them. And,
yes, we
and,
do.
And there's certain things you come to regret. I think that the one thing that I respect with the Patriots and Belichick is, you know, he always says that when you get here, it's a clean slate and, you know, you have to prove it. And so since Blount has been here for 3 weeks, he hasn't done anything that would tell you to take him off the field, at least from my perspective. He's earned, you know, his time. But what happened in Pittsburgh happened in Pittsburgh, and that's the way it goes. I know some people, that's hard for some people because they feel like, well, how can he walk away from his team, come into a starting job, and Jonas Gray, you know, can make a mistake and have it taken away from him? Well, that mistake happened here, you know, at a bad time after your big game, you know, when if anything, you need to be extra vigilant, you know, to follow what you're doing and fall in line. So That's what I would say, John. Say blunt right now would be my answer.
Good stuff. Thank you for spending some time with us
Thanks
today.
Thanks for having me on. That was
greatly,
fun.
Greatly appreciated. Yeah. I know everybody really enjoys your work and following your stuff on online as well as getting a chance to glimpse at you at television. And,
John.
Thanks for remembering us little guys down here at the bottom.
John, it's not little guys. It's we're all, no, for real. We all in it together. I love talking football. So
I can do it all the time.
To it, definitely. Although,
that's one of the reasons why, you know, on this program, and I've told the listeners here, it's why I give my personal Facebook page.
Yeah.
I don't do a fan page. I don't do a, you know, hey, a playbook page. It's my personal page.
Yeah.
And so when something comes up, you know, if you want to fire off a post or if you see I'm online, you want to fire off the little chat function there, do it. It's fun because I could talk football 365 easily.
Definitely. And you know, I do take it a little personally in a good way, you know, like the Patriots 20 years, you know, or 21 years of this craft ownership and sort of what they've accomplished and all the different ways to follow the team, you know, through the team website and, you know, different areas. And like, John, you're a big part of it, you know, with the PA at the stadium, the environment, you know what I mean? So it's sort of fun. All of us in our different roles, you know, sort of
it's some
are
of
part
that,
of this great, this just great time. I never will stop appreciating it.
It's something you didn't really realize you would get involved with. And then once you get in it and you have a chance to kind of cultivate it and increase the experience for everybody, not only yourself, but for those that, you know, come to the games, it's a pretty cool thing to do. I mean, it's all cutting edge stuff. Nobody put the template out for what we do.
No.
You know, so we kind of do it as we go, and that's part of the excitement.
When people see you, do they come in and say, and it's another,
of course,
Patriots
all the time.
First down.
Most of the functions that I go to, or I'm asked to MC or go to, you know, everybody knows. And so if
so
I don't give
it
to them, they're disappointed. So I give it to them. You know, you have to. It's just part of it.
Fine.
Now, and I wish that I had gotten a patent on that damn thing, because then I could retire and say, to hell with all of you.
I love it.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having me on, John.
You got it. Mike Reese from ESPNBoston.com. Kev, we'll take a timeout here. We're going to come back and re-cue it all. Keep the cards and letters coming here. One of the things we do want to focus on today in hashtag WTF Wednesday is the Miami Dolphins and what you think will be the key point of concern for New England coming up this Sunday against the Dolphins. Is it offense or is it defense? Is it a position or is it a part of the game plan that you feel the Patriots should take advantage of to beat Miami and make it a successful hat and t-shirt day? That's what I want to find out from you. 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com, at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. And if you're not following, well, then what the hell's your problem? And John Darrook on Facebook, right here, inside Patriots Playbook.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt. Before she drove to New York. And before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio. Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to step inside the playbook? Hit up John toll-free on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, back to the man, the myth, the legend himself, John Rook.
Legend in my own mind, of course, as we talk about here on Patriots.com radio. Thanks again to Mike Reese and Eric Scalavino for sticking around in the opening hour. And Mike was he'll be a part of the Patriots All Access program this week for those that watch that show. And it was good of him to come down and spend some time with us and to spend a little time with you as well, because he knows this is where you get the viewers, the readers, the followers, everything right here on Patriots.com. If you're interested in the NFL, you're interested in the New England Patriots, this is the place to be. All right, so the question then that we have for the remainder of the program, and just before the end of the show, we'll let you listen in to Tom Brady's press conference from earlier today here at Gillette. But the question is, what's the focus? It is WTF Wednesday, of course. What's the focus? What should be the focus for New England against Miami on Sunday? Is this all an offensive game plan or offensive point of view? Is it a defensive point of view, as was suggested by one of our questions and one of our callers earlier? You know, are you worried about Miami, you know, and the possible read option and that kind of thing? Or is it an offensive focus and trying to move the ball, run the ball on Miami because they do seem susceptible to the run? Or do you just keep doing it as you've been doing it? And is that going to be successful enough? Because we all have, and we've all had, some problems with the choice of play call. Let's just be honest. We should call it what it is. I'm curious to know where you think. What's going to beat Miami on Sunday? It's the whole T-shirt and hats thing, right? I love it. Let's go to the phones. Nick Baby Love's on the line. Hello, Nick.
How you doing, John?
I'm great.
I'm getting better and better at this. I'm down here in Miami.
Yes, sir.
I just love what you did today with Mike Reese, and this is what it's all about, because I'm obviously, you know, I'm working with everybody.
Sure.
Behind the scenes. You did something two or three weeks ago, and I told Kevin I've been dying to talk to you about it, because I, obviously, being a cancer survivor and being somebody who's legally blind and somebody who happens to be a real big cheese in the music business, I'm going to help this kid, Mr. Lifau, and do everything for what your vision you had going back 14 years is great. Without me losing my train of thought here on the Dolphins and what I want to talk about, Eric Scalavino and you had an amazing, I wish we could replay it, an amazing conversation. And he's the only one I haven't met yet or been on with. And believe it, because of all this, and I just want to tell the story briefly, but
sure.
You had him on. The interview is going to be replayed because, for me, here's one thing I know about Mr. Kraft. I mean, I know a lot of famous people. I'm not friends with him or whatever, but there's a whole story why I'm doing all this, because of mitzvah. That's a Hebrew term for giving back.
Correct.
That's what Myra Kraft did all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Eric on, mm-hmm. and I can't tell you, the people I had re-listened to and everybody I talked to that are all animal lovers, it was just unbelievable, and that's the diversity that I love in your show, that you put that on, and I'm more than happy here. They all know how to get a hold of me to help him. It's about just helping everybody because, you know, I'm lucky I'm alive, bro.
Good. Yeah, I get it. You're grateful. And I think that's wonderful. And I will most definitely make sure that Eric realizes your graciousness here.
Well, and not only that, what's hilarious is Geno Smith's family lives 2 miles from me down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday I'm going to be watching a game with 10 of my friends from radio here that are all Dolphin crazy. So what do you think I'm dealing with? The smack talk is unbelievable.
Well, of course. And you know what, though, Nick? They have a right to do that because they did whip the Patriots back in week one. The only difference here is that these are both different teams now, as we've been talking about today. So the question is, are the Patriots able to take advantage of the differences, not only that they hold, but the differences that they find in Miami from back in September?
You know, I trust your opinion so much from, you know, like I said, listening to you. I think where I'm at through this whole journey is you just hit it right on point. I mean, not only are they a different team, but you know what? Let's get the most out of what we're going to do with Miami, with the Jets, with Buffalo, because you know what? We're not going to get too many shots at this. And I think, as I told the guys earlier on PFW, I'm just curious of your opinion with this. Don't you just feel it, John? I mean, you feel it in your gut, the defense and everything.
You know, I feel better about the defense after this week in particular, playing in San Diego. And I wrote about that this week, and I really thought that, you know, during the course of the game on Sunday night, I felt like, wow, we actually may have a championship caliber defense. My only hesitation in going all in on this thing is with some of the I don't want to say inadequacies, inconsistencies would be more apt term that we've seen offensively in terms of their penchant for committing mistakes. You in the playoffs, and nobody really realizes this until you get there, and then we have this unbelievable penchant for just forgetting things in the off season. But every year in the playoffs, things get magnified, and every mistake gets magnified by not just the media and fans, but by the other team. And that's what you really need to worry about. So when you know, on 3rd and 12, you get off the field and then you're guilty of defensive holding 5 yards first down, that's the kind of thing not only will make you tear your hair out, but that's the kind of thing that will lose you a football game and put you on the golf course a week before you thought you were going to be there. And so that's what I'm talking about. And that's my major concern with this team right now, to answer my own question that I just asked everybody of, what's your big concern? My big concern this week against Miami, next week at New York, and the following against Buffalo, and then throughout the entire playoff run, is attention to detail. The little things, because the little things are what win you championships. Yes, you have to have the defense, without a doubt. It's not quite as important, Nick, I don't think, as we've seen throughout history in the NFL, certainly more so maybe over the last 10 to 12, 15 years since we've had the advent of the West Coast offense and those kind of things. However, You still have to have a defense that can stop people and get off the field. This team is developing that, but then they do something infuriating to keep them back on the field. And then that's why the third down, you know, conversion rate is higher for New England than it is for other teams that are in like positions. And that is, of course, in a playoff and or contending position. So I need to see better consistency that way. And I need to see on offense, I need to see, the ability to run consistently well against all types of fronts. And that's probably best suited for the offensive line. So the offensive line would be a concern of mine at this stage right now. I thought they were finally getting it together, and now there's been a bit of a hiccup over the last couple of weeks. And I think it's because they're so concerned with some of the speed rushes that get around in, and they're concerned about keeping Brady clean. This is going to be another supreme test of that ability this week against the Dolphins. Because we saw what they were able to do against the Patriots back in week one. Again, different time. These teams have evolved, and not necessarily for the negative. I think actually both teams have evolved to the positive. But Miami, having struggled of late, needs this game desperately. It's going to take at least 10 wins to get into the playoffs. I want to see what kind of gas they have in the tank. So I'm not ready yet to go all in, but I'm very, very, very close.
Well, you know what? I agree with you. And like I said, as all the other guys know me, I'm not going to just blow smoke. One of the biggest comments of the year, I mean, two things happened to me where I see this as a real team, but it's Vince, because the players listen. Them saying they don't listen to John Rook and PFW and Felgren Maz and all that is, I know because I'm dealing with players here, you know what I mean? So Vince Wilfork, there was two things that happened. Vince Wilfork made a comment about the bandwagon jumpers. Mm-hmm. And that's what the only thing that bothers me about the new school Patriot fans, where I wish you would just stick right in a zone with what you're doing right now with, you know, no bandwagon jumpers. In other words, this is going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a Brandon Bolden making a special teams play. It's going to take Darrell Revis became a Patriot when he got into it, like a vicious argument that game against the knucklehead from Detroit. So, you know what I mean? All those little things, instead of this, the Patriots are going to Super Bowl, it's guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right.
You know, to me, it's about the journey. And, you know, I'll repeat again, I hope you do more stuff like Eric Scalavino, because I'm going on the record here. All he's going to do is call whatever, Paul Perillo, SJ, they all got my number. You know, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that is going to blow this up through the roof, you know, with your vision about this going worldwide and doing everything. And obviously, there's a lot of animal lovers out there, you know. And
very true.
I'm just reemphasizing to you, that show had a profound effect. I got two major artists I work with. They listen to it again because they're members of PETA. And if that's how you pronounce it.
PETA, right.
So, mm-hmm. You know, I just hope, you continue with that diversity with the show. And, you know, I'm loving it, man.
Thank you, Nick. I sure appreciate that. And thank you for your time today and for your patronage of the program and everything that we do here on Patriots.com radio. Let's get to phone lines are open, 855-PATS-500. If you have your thoughts on the game, then coming up on Sunday, tomorrow in the playbook, let me go ahead and get this in because it just came to the front of my frontal lobe here, and sometimes I forget when you're trying to shuffle the deck, so to speak. You know, my brain kind of works like, you know, a dealer at the casino. You know, every once in a while I got to reshuffle the deck because it's predictable what keeps coming out, you know. This is my version of counting cards, I guess. Tomorrow on the program, our friend Armando Salguero, who has covered the Miami Dolphins for years with the Miami Herald, columnist for the Herald covering the NFL and the Dolphins, he's going to join us in the opening hour of the show. So we're going to get his perspective on whether or not this is cutthroat, do or die, for lack of a better phrase, nut cutting time for the Miami Dolphins this Sunday. And if that sense of urgency behind the Dolphins is enough to get them over hump. I don't think, and I'm sure that Armando will agree, I don't think that the Dolphins feel like they need anything extra because they've already beaten New England once this year. That should be incentive enough. It should also be incentive enough, I believe, from the other perspective. In other words, the Patriots didn't win in Miami in the first game. And so that should be enough to, you know, want to get up and kick their butts around the field this Sunday, looking at it from the New England side. So that's going to bring some intrigue to the matchup again. And even though things seem to have continued to progress as largely we thought might before the season started, it took a little bit different tact at the beginning of the year. That was one of the games that we didn't think the Patriots would lose, and they lost it. So do they rectify that problem? Talk about that with Armando tomorrow. And, of course, the one and only guru, Russell Baxter, he'll join us in hour two of the program to look at Week 15 throughout the NFL, take a special close look at the Patriots and Dolphins and anything else good that's hot this week in the National Football League. Our own pro football guru joins us in hour two, as he always does on Thursday. So it'll be a good show again tomorrow. Make your plans to attend. Now, that being said, couple of emails here. Oh, I've got a just popped up on Facebook here. This comes from Tony on Facebook, who says, John, hi, love the show. I'm a Patriots fan from Everett who just happens to live in New Jersey now. That's where I met your friend John Hennessy. He is a bit under the weather with his back at the moment, but he will bounce back just like we will bounce back from that Miami loss early in the season and show them the real deal. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate the note. And please pass on my regards to John if you are in contact with him. Now we got some emails that have rolled in a bit here. Matt says, John, great win in San Diego. However, I don't think these next games should be considered a wash. The Dolphins are going to try to play spoiler to the Pats winning the division crown. The wounded Jets at MetLife are not to be taken lightly, and the Bills are going to try to squeeze out any kind of win to somehow make their way into the playoffs. I believe the Pats can and should win these next games, but it's never safe to say that these teams will just roll over and lose. You know, I said that yesterday, Matt. I could not agree more. It bears repeating, and I'm glad you said it again today. I'll probably say it again tomorrow, and we'll probably repeat it next week, and maybe the week after that, even for the last game of the regular season. Because it's very, very trite to say this, but on any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody. And that's the beauty of the NFL. It's maddening. It makes you want to pull your hair out. It drives some people to drink. But, you know, that's why we love the National Football League, because of the level of parity. I mean, and so that gets back to, you know, discussions we've had here previously over the quote-unquote dynastic feel to this Patriots franchise right now. And considering what the Patriots have done over the last 14 to 15 years especially, is truly remarkable. And I think that's why you've seen the Patriots, again, sometimes much to our chagrin, not go for it, you know, and get that one or two guy and pop the salary cap and all that kind of stuff, you know, to the best of your ability and get that one guy that might be the difference maker. But that's why you see the Patriots stay relevant year in and year out, competitive, good enough to win the AFC East, which they could do for a 12th time already this weekend. Like I said, hat and t-shirt game coming up on Sunday. Because of the relevancy and because of the parity in the league, the Patriots have decided from an organizational standpoint, and again, this is my thought, not necessarily the official quote-unquote stance for the New England Patriots, but this is my own personal thought. They operate the way they do, kids, simply because they know it can be a crapshoot. So if you do your due diligence on the guys who are available, the guys that are the money guys, and also do what you can to build up your depth, which the Patriots have worked hard at as well this year, and you can arguably say better than anybody else in the league right now, considering some of the frontline injuries that they have suffered this year. They realize that all you got to do is to get into the playoffs, and you got a shot, because the playoffs are the playoffs, and that's where your fundamentals, and that's where your attention to detail, you know, and that's where also having, you know, they thought in the past, an explosive offense, but now I think they've come off of that a little bit and said, well, you got to have the offense, yes, but you also have to have still a quote-unquote championship-caliber defense. So they've taken some great pains to make this team younger and quicker on the defensive side of the ball, and because of that, now if you can just stay relevant and get yourself into the postseason, you got a shot to win every year. That's why the Patriots do what they do. So while it kills us sometimes to see them, oh, God, should have gone after that guy. Understand, they are being disciplined in their philosophy. And can't blame them for that. You really can't. I believe that, and as much as it pains me sometimes to admit it, as a Pats fan, as well as someone who covers the team for a living, that just is what it is. And this is where the whole "In Bill We Trust" thing comes into play, and why it's been so famous amongst Patriots fans everywhere, because this is the truth. This is they believe that they can win any year. Some years are going to be better than others, because some years you're going to get hit by the injury bug worse than others. This year they've been hit, but not as bad as some. And the guys that have been hit have had extraordinary play come up and take their place. To wit, Jerod Mayo. Has anybody uttered his word, his name, in 6 weeks? Hardly. And it's because of the job that Dante Hightower has done, and this last week the job that Jamie Collins did. That's what the Patriots expect their guys to do. And as fans, it's what you should expect these guys to do. And if they do it, we talk about it. If they don't do it, well, then it's probably worth, you know, nitpicking over, as we do on Tuesdays as well. Gabe says, let's see. Oh, this was from, he said, had one from Mike here. He said, so do you feel following the pass all these years, it's left you palimpsestic? That was, I can't even pronounce Eric's word today. Palimpsestic. Cystic. Towards their first title run, and how you cover the team to this year's group of players now. Gabe, you get tremendous kudos for putting that in a sentence that I can't even pronounce. Gabe says, John, everyone was hard on Solder last week, but I think when Freeney slammed his helmet up and snapped his head back early in the game, I think he might have gotten a bit looped on that play, which caused him to play erratic the rest of the game. Yes, but he did have, Gabe, as you'll recall, his biggest problems, I think, handling some of that rush early in the first quarter as the Chargers got out to the lead, and then following the mistakes the Patriots had, it made it 14-3 in the second quarter. I think that's where it started to kind of, you know, get back into shape a bit for him. He says, this week the Pats need to shut down Cameron Wake and that Fish D-line, keep Brady clean, parenthesis language, and upright. Nice logo he sent, too. Somebody with chopsticks here chewing up the Dolphin logo. Nice. So squish the fish. Good points, Gabe. Thank you very much for that. Gustavo, John, great show like always. The key to victory for our Pats is to score touchdowns in the red zone area. So we'd have to start with Brady being sharp and precise. No more interceptions. He needs to start getting red hot for the playoffs. That's a good point, Gustavo. Admittedly, after the game, Brady took ownership of that touchdown late in the first half against the Chargers last Sunday night. Bad play on his part. He said so. Bad pass. Bad play. Got to do better than that. So he owned up, and he moved on. It's true. And I would have to agree with you. 1-for-4 scoring touchdowns in the red zone generally isn't going to do it. I think at a minimum, if you've got an offense that you feel like is potent, and the Patriots have one of the top still three scoring offenses in the league, they're scoring better than 30 points per game on average this year. So because you've got an efficient offense that can score points when it needs to, even though I think we've probably talked more about the misses than the hits for the offense this year, which is kind of scary if you think about it, the job that you have to do in the red zone is extra important. You got to go at least 50% touchdowns in the red zone. At least! I would say it probably should be up over 70%. I think this team is capable of that. So 1-for-4, it's not a good batting average. Touchdowns in the red zone area. That's a great focus for this week. Excellent, excellent focus, Gustavo. Touchdowns in the red zone. Because if they can score 3 or 4 touchdowns in the red zone, Miami will not win this game. It's that simple. They won't. Brian in Essex, Vermont says, what's the focus? Offensive line, as much as they progressed since the loss in Kansas City, I feel they've taken a few steps back in recent games, and Nate Solder's futility at blocking the spin move needs to be the ultimate focus. His issues this year have been truly concerning for a number of reasons. For one, he's a first-round pick being paid, what, $7 million a year? And for some reason, he needed a rookie center to be there to not play like a complete jag. There's something very wrong with this picture. He may be quiet. He may not be a leader. Doesn't mean he can't play up to his pay grade, even when the rest of the line is in flux. It's definitely on him, Brian. It's an interesting point by you. It's certainly a legitimate point. it's up to him to you know, be able to handle that spin move, and hopefully that's something he can continue to work on fundamentally in practices. Second, he says, getting the offense back and rolling. This obviously ties into the O-lines of efficacy. I think he means efficiency. But I think the Patriots need to finish this year on a high note, and that means the offense and defense firing on all cylinders. For a while, that was happening, but of late, the offense has petered off, while the defense has remained playing at an exceptionally high level. Terrible calls by the refs notwithstanding. Yes, there have been numerous the past three games. Let's see, what else we have? Okay, furthermore, if I were Browner, I'd accept that the league has it out for him and go the exact opposite you suggest, Rook. If anything, hit harder and ensure that any 15-yard penalty also takes his player out of the game. No, I don't mean injury. I just mean those receivers don't want anything to do with the ball. Those kinds of hits are what they should expect. I see your point, Brian, but it's going to get flagged again. And the one flag that ends up, you know, calling back a touchdown or calling back a first down or killing a drive, and you end up losing by one score, that's the one that you're going to rue. Oh, shouldn't have done that. That has to be a hard and fast rule. Just can't go there. I get it, you know, the whole physicality, setting the tone, tempo, blah, blah. I understand it. I think you can hit them hard if you hit them in the stomach just as well as you can hit them hard in the shoulder pads. And that's what I'm talking about. And then Brian says, beyond that, I don't expect the Dolphins game to be much or anything remotely close to what we saw in week one. The Dolphins' success at home with the weather 80 degrees or higher is well documented. Their futility in Foxborough in December is well documented as well. Although I will interject here that they have had some success here late in the year. I think it was largely with not much on the line, but let's just call it as it is. They've still had some success here. Not a lot, but some. Not impossible. Plus, the defense is playing at a much, much higher level. The O-line isn't the ever-changing beast it was in the summer, and the offensive weapons have actually had nearly a full season with the playbook. It may as well be a new season because the Patriots then and the Patriots now are simply different teams. Well-thought-out email, Brian, and thank you for sending that. I certainly understand what you're talking about. I don't expect the Dolphin game to be close. I do expect the Dolphins to try to do what they have in the past done very well. And this is where I would call on the Patriots and their focus, being twofold. I kind of look at two areas of concern. Number one, making sure that you make, the quarterback, one dimensional as possible. Because I don't believe that he has, you know, like the numbers would indicate, don't believe he has tremendous accuracy beyond 20 yards. I think the Dolphins have only one play of 40 yards or more this year. That's incredible. That's incredible. So if Tannehill can't go deep, then, you know, I'm packing guys, you know, within, you know, 10 yards of the line of scrimmage or putting eight in the box and saying, okay, beat me over the top, fellas. Absolutely. Got single coverage there. Beat me over the top because I don't think you can. That's number one. And number two, you know, admittedly, you probably made a bit of a mistake in terms of the theory and the game plan going into Green Bay because they obliterated you in time of possession. Don't let Miami do this to you. Grab the ball. You know what I'm going to say, right? You know, time of possession. You know that if they win the toss, you know they're going to defer. It's just what they do. They just do it. It irritates me to no end, but they're just going to do it. I'm used to seeing it. I'm used to seeing it. So, at any rate, that's you got to dictate tempo offensively. That means run the ball. Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John. How you doing, man?
I'm good, pal. How's it going today?
Oh, great, man. I love listening to your show. I couldn't get to you yesterday. My headset was out, so I couldn't talk.
No worries. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, but I like the show yesterday, too. Focus for today. Same type of first two emails.
Mm-hmm.
One is red zone efficiency, and the other is the O-line. You know, and third, I hate to admit, but I don't have to because he's my hero, Brady.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is much erratic season I've seen. Not even last year, he was this bad. He wasn't, you know, this bad last year with rookie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I'm just wondering, you know, if it's the pressure or if it's know, he ain't concentrating right or what?
No, I think honestly, you know, he's taken the sword here. He's falling on it and saying, you know, those are on me. They got to be better throws. I think part of it probably has to do with the breakdown in front of him. That's, again, I think he's, again, fallen on the sword for his teammates, which is why we've talked some about the focus needing to be on the offensive line and keeping him clean and keeping him protected. And that is going to be, has to be a focus this week for the offense because of Miami's ability to rush the passer. And they know, because they rushed him effectively in week one, that Miami's going to pin their ears back and come after him again this Sunday. That's not going to change from week one. That's where there will be some similarity. I can almost guarantee that.
Yeah, that too. And then, like I said, they looked at last week, week before last, how they got to Brady too.
But yes.
Still, you know, that's still something else. And then my other problem is Gronk. You know, like the last couple of weeks, you know, he got in the zone a couple of times instead of, you know, catching like they really, is he hurt or is he just slowed down a little bit or is...
No, I don't think he's hurt. I don't think he's slowed down. I think what he's taken to heart, something that actually Antonio Gates from San Diego talked a little last week, and that is pacing yourself. Because Gates himself said that, you know, he was Gronk-like when he was younger, but he learned that you have to learn how to stay on the field and not risk, you know, an injury so you can be there for your team and continue to be the kind of player that you personally want to be. And frankly, I think Gronk has taken some of that to heart. Now, I think that's just my own opinion, but I think Gronk, for his reckless or with the reckless abandon, I think that we should say that he does play with it. Admittedly, he does play with that. I think he realizes that, you know, hey, I want to stay on the field too, so maybe I do need to dial it down a notch. And I really think that's all you're kind of getting out of that.
Coverage, okay. I thought sometimes it might be the coverage where they maybe triple teaming or whatever.
No.
And like,
well, he is going to face some double team. I mean, you know, he'll get either a linebacker, which is a mistake, or a defensive back, which is a mistake. You know, getting help over the top, which is exactly what you have to do. So he will continue to face double teams throughout. That's going to happen, and he's going to have to learn how to fight through that.
And one more question I'll ask you, John. Something that Mr. Mike brought up because I heard him on the radio.
Uh huh.
My other concern is, what if one or other receivers go out? You know, like, heaven forbid, Edelman or...
Well, they have a replacement. If something happened to Edelman, Amendola gets plugged into that.
Okay. And then, okay. And Tim's with LaFell.
That would be my guess, yes. That would be my guess. And they still have Josh Boyce on the practice squad they could activate.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. All right, John. Good show as usual, man. Have a good one.
Eldridge, you the man. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate that. Let's hear from the quarterback. Tom Brady, earlier today here at Gillette Stadium, the very latest on his preparations, not only coming from the West Coast back to East Coast, as Mike Reese talked about earlier, and how he kind of feels dead. What about this team? Are they going through some of the same things? Mike didn't play. What about the players? So we'll get into some of that, preparations for Miami and the Dolphins. Don't forget tomorrow in the playbook, Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald, Russell Baxter, and you. Prediction Thursday returns. We did not get a winner again last week, and we've got 3 weeks left in the regular season. So time to step up your game and pick the score. I will say this, it was the Miami home game last year that we got four winners. Think about that. That's in Thursday's playbook. Here's the quarterback.
This is the first time we played them. How long has it been?
13 weeks.
12, 13. Been a long time.
Does it feel like a long time to you?
From the beginning of the season to the end of the season, yeah. I mean, sometimes it goes quick, sometimes it goes pretty fast, you know, depending on the kind of mood you're in. So after we lose, things go pretty slow. When we win, they go fast. So, you know, it's been a while. They've changed a little bit. So have we. So hopefully we're at our best. It was a good team, good defense. You know, they play really, they got a lot of guys up front that can rush. Guys in the secondary that are playing really well. And big physical athletic linebackers. So tough defense.
Tom, along that line, because it's been such a big interval when you played them, does that first game really mean anything in terms of preparation? Getting ready for them, or is this a completely new chapter and a completely new time of the season that you have to really throw away that first game for both teams?
Well, I think we're definitely watching that game. You end up watching all the games just because all of them can provide some insight. Certainly that game can provide a lot of insight. But our team's a little bit different now. So there's going to be some new things that we do. I'm sure they're going to have some new things. Ultimately, it comes down to how well we execute. And they force you to do a lot of things really well. So it tests everything. I think they blitz a lot. They cover well. They rush good. They score points offensively, so we know we're going to have to score a lot of points. But this team makes it tough. They got some great edge rushers. They got some great inside guys, stop the run, good at safety. So, I know they've been banged up this year, but it looks like they're all healthy now. So we're preparing for, their best, and I'm sure we'll get it. So we have to be prepared.
What do you remember the most about the difference between the first half when you scored 20 points and the second half when you didn't score at all?
It was just our execution was really poor. We got behind. To score 20 points down there was decent. We got a couple turnovers. I'm sure this game will be a little bit different. However it goes, we got to be prepared to play for 60 minutes. And I don't think you can play 30 good minutes against this team and expect to win. So you're going to have to, go out there and play really well for the entire game.
Josh has said on numerous times this year that he wants some semblance of balance on offense. As the quarterback, does it really matter to you how you're moving the ball as long as you're scoring points and winning? Or is having some kind of balance important to you?
Well, yeah, it's scoring points is the ultimate, and that's what we're trying to do. And, however you need to do that, that's what you have to be able to do. Some games you may throw it a little more, some days you may run it a little bit more, depending on how the game goes or how the flow of the game goes. Those things kind of sort themselves out. But you'd love to come out of every game running it as much as you would have hoped. And, you're throwing it. Running the ball, you really can control the pace of the game. You can control the tempo of it. And, when we run it well, it's really critical to our success. So, and that doesn't matter if we run it, 40 times or 25 times. It's just you got to run it really efficiently. And, the backs we have, they're making great runs, and they're boring holes in the defensive line. Our offense line's done a great job of that. This week, we're definitely going to need to be able to do both.
Curious, as a competitor and someone so passionate about the game, is there the slightest sense of revenge just going against this opponent and the way things ended in this one?
This is a division opponent, so I think there's always a great rivalry, and we've had a lot of great games against them. And then losing to them earlier, that was a tough way to start the year. But this is a different game. I think we have a lot of motivation. For us, we got to have a great week. It starts, today, getting off to a good start in practice. But it'll be a lot of emotion and energy there. It's a very, it's a very competitive game. It's a very competitive division. They're a division rival. So everything's on the line.
How do you decide what kind of throw to make post-snap when a guy's in his room? And the reason I ask is, obviously it's been a little too busy for you, but Gronkowski leaked it out into the second play of the game. If you would have put more air under it, you might have had a better chance to adjust, but that might have brought somebody else in. When it was one till it fell, he did know nothing. He went back to that. That didn't work. But then he had one that he threw, took Gronk right over the head of, I believe, Flowers.
Sure.
Perfect. How do you decide? There are times you go, damn, I should have probably done something else.
Yeah, it's usually a field thing. It's hard to explain that sometimes, and it's hard to explain that to Josh sometimes. He's thinking, what do you see on that? Or, sometimes it's just maybe the DB gets a little off balance, or, he gets his feet in the wrong position, and I don't know, I think instincts take over at that point. So usually when you miss them, you think, wow, I probably should have done something different. When you hit them, that's what you wanted to do. Sometimes you have the right idea, and one person's thinking one thing, and the other person's thinking another, and it's an incompletion, and those are the ones you really need to, improve on. Because when you have opportunities when guys are open, you can't miss those. Because there's other times where they're not open just by, for the sake of, playing good defense. You hate to miss the ones where there should be completions. Like the second one of the game, that should have been a completion. So it's just a little gauge in your head that, tells you how much trajectory or how much pace to put on it. You know, I probably only like to put as much pace as I need. You know, because if you throw everything hard, sometimes the harder you throw it, the harder it is to catch it. So you know, I try to gauge it based on, you know, all the reps that I've taken over the years.
And the ensuing alteration that the receiver makes, you guys have to be on the same page. Is that, say, for instance, LaFell, the next time he goes, he starts thinking back shoulder, and you've altered it so that you're going over the top. You guys have to talk it out afterwards, I would imagine, and say, here's what I saw, here's what you should do.
Yeah, it's a lot of timing and anticipation, and you know, it's when, like I said, when one person's thinking one thing and the other's thinking the other, then, you know, it's hard to have a high level of success at that point. And usually it just takes a lot of playing together, a lot of reps, a lot of making the mistakes so that we can correct them. But, yeah, being on the same page for all of us is important. And that's not just quarterback receiver, but that's, you know, linemen working together. That's back setting up blocks in the run game. It's all, you know, being able to be confident in each other so that you can really feel free to use your instincts. And, you know, that's when your offense is really clicking. You got a good rhythm. And the ball's coming out of your hand quick before they're making their cuts. And they're expecting the ball in certain places. They're getting it. Helps their timing out, too. So I think all those things play a factor. And all those things are important.
If you guys went on Sunday, you clinched the division under Les Coleman. Number one, has there been, will there be discussion of that?
Coach hasn't mentioned that today. Normally he has, but I mean, it's, yeah, there's, you know, you're playing for a division championship, so it's a very important game. You work pretty hard to get to this point. And, you know, the guys have put a lot of work in over the whole offseason, and to put ourselves in this position has been a lot of fun, but, you know, we got to go out there and capitalize. This is a tough team to do it against. So, you know, they got some goals that they have too, and I think that's what makes for a great game is when both teams are determined to win, and, you know, only one team can win.
I think you said yesterday, Tommy's not going to spend more than 15 seconds talking about that. Is that maybe an indication to you guys that the goals around here are definitely much bigger?
Well, it's a long season. I think that's, and this is only the, you know, we still got three games left, so there's a lot of football to be played. There's a lot of things to be decided. The only thing that matters is this week. I mean, that's the only thing we can control. So we're going to go out there and try to control it the best we can, try to go out there and play the way that we're capable of and see if we can have a great day of execution, and certainly better than we've had the last 2 weeks.
Tom, you've been part of so many teams that have won the division here, though. Does, quote-unquote, just clinching a division ever get old?
Absolutely not. I think we're, you know, trying to win every time we take the field. So winning never gets old. I know that. I think after that, you know, that feeling that we had the other night was a great feeling. And that's what motivates you to win, because you know the opposite side of that. And, you know, we've got to do the things that help us win as opposed to do the things that, you know, make us lose games. So should be a fun week.
Tom, when Bill tells the team after a game like on Sunday night, I'll see you Wednesday, in theory, that means a couple of days off, I guess. For you, though, are you compelled to stick to the same routine? How much time do you spend on Monday and Tuesday investing in preparation for Sunday's game, regardless?
All day. Yeah, it's just that kind of, it's that time of the year. So I don't think there's any off days. I think that maybe in the collective bargaining agreement, but not necessarily in, you know, quarterback's preparation. So I do a lot of work, and, you know, I enjoy it, so that's the easy part. I get to do something I love to do.
It seems like almost on a weekly basis, Julian takes a big hit or two. I'm wondering if there's anything you can do to kind of keep him out of those situations, or if it's just the nature of his position that those things are going to happen every once in a while.
Sure, yeah, he's, you know, I try to avoid that the best I can, and he's, you're right, he's, he has taken some hits this year, and that's football too, and I think he does a great job preparing himself and repairing himself so he can go back out there the following weekend to be able to do it. And yeah, it's hard for everybody, and Jules is not a big guy. When you get hit by people that are bigger than you, you know, obviously that takes a toll. So, you know, the more of those collisions we can, you know, not, none of us want those to happen, but we got to do our best to avoid those, certainly.
Did you see Gronk's ESPN photo shoot with a kitten?
No.
You should.
Okay. I'll check it out.
You got in trouble for the baby goat. You guys better give it to him. Yes.
I'm going to look for it. All right. Thanks, guys.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Want to split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument of flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to